drained from me like blood down a drain. The blight can truly kill people, I managed to say. Younglings, it had killed children, like some storm of darkness and death. And if offspring were as rare as Alice had claimed, the loss of so many would be more devastating than I could imagine. Tamlin's eyes were shadowed, and he slowly shook his head, as if trying to clear the grief and shock of those deaths from him.
The blight is capable of hurting us in ways you...
He shot to his feet so quickly that his chair flipped over. He unsheathed his claws and snarled at the open doorway, canines long and gleaming. The house, usually full of whispering skirts and chatter of servants, had gone silent. Not the pregnant silence of fire night, but rather a trembling quiet that made me want to scramble under the table, or just start running. Lucian swore and drew his sword.
Get Feyre to the window, by the curtains,
Tamlin growled to Lucian, not taking his eyes off the open doors. Lucian's hand gripped my elbow, dragging me out of my chair. What's, I started, but Tamlin growled again, the sound echoing through the room. I snatched one of the knives off the table and let Lucian lead me to the window, where he pushed me against the velvet drapes. I wanted to ask why he didn't bother hiding me behind them, but the fox-masked fairy just pressed his back into me, pinning me between him and the wall. The tang of magic shoved itself up my nostrils. Though his sword was pointed at the floor, Lucian's grip on it tightened until his knuckles turned white. Magic. A glamour. To conceal me, to make me a part of Lucian. Invisible, hidden by the fairy's magic and scent. I peered over his shoulder at Tamlin, who took a long breath and sheathed his claws and fangs, his baldric of knives appearing from thin air across his chest. But he didn't draw any of the knives as he righted his chair and slouched in it, picking at his nails, as if nothing were happening. But someone was coming, someone awful enough to frighten them, someone who would want to hurt me if they knew I was here. The hissing voice of the adder slithered through my memory. There were worse creatures than it, Tamlin had told me. Worse than the Naga and the Suriel and the Bog, too. Footsteps sounded from the hall. Even, strolling, casual. Tamlin continued cleaning his nails, and in front of me, Lucian assumed a position of appearing to be looking out the window. The footsteps grew louder, the scuff of boots on marble tiles. And then he appeared. No mask. He, like the adder, belonged to something else. Someone else. And worse, I'd met him before. He'd saved me from those three fairies on fire night. With steps that were too graceful, too feline, he approached the dining table and stopped a few yards from the High Lord. He was exactly as I remembered him, with his fine, rich clothing cloaked in tendrils of night, an ebony tunic brocaded with gold and silver, dark pants and black boots that went to his knees. I'd never dared to paint him, and now knew I would never have the nerve to. High Lord? The stranger crooned, inclining his head slightly. Not a bow. Tamlin remained seated. With his back to me, I couldn't see his face, but Tamlin's voice was laced with the promise of violence as he said,
What do you want, Reesund?
Reesund smiled, heartbreaking in its beauty, and put a hand on his chest.
Reesund? Come now, Tamlin. I don't see you for 49 years and you start calling me Reesund? Only my prisoners and my enemies call me that.
His grin widened as he finished, and something in his countenance turned feral and deadly, more so than I'd ever seen Tamlin look. Reason turned, and I held my breath as he ran an eye over Lucian.
A fox mask. Appropriate for you, Lucian.
Go to hell, Reese,
Lucian snapped.
Always a pleasure dealing with the rabble,
Reason said, and faced Tamlin again.
I still didn't breathe.
I hope I wasn't interrupting.
We were in the middle of lunch,
Tamlin said, his voice void of the warmth to which I'd become accustomed.
The voice of the High Lord. It turned my insides cold.
Stimulating,
Reason purred.
What are you doing here, Reese?
Tamlin demanded, still in his seat.
I wanted to check up on you. I wanted to see how you were faring, if you got my little present.
Your present was unnecessary.
But a nice reminder of the fun days, wasn't it?
Reese clicked his tongue and surveyed the room.
Almost half a century holed up in a country estate. I don't know how you manage it.
But, he said, facing Tamlin again,
you're such a stubborn bastard that this must have seemed like a paradise compared to Under the Mountain. I suppose it is. I'm surprised, though. 49 years and no attempts to save yourself or your lands. Even now that things are getting interesting again.
There's nothing to be done, conceded Tamlin, his voice low.
Reason approached Tamlin, each movement smooth as silk. His voice dropped into a whisper, an erotic caress of sound that brought heat to my cheeks.
What a pity that you must endure the brunt of it, Tamlin. And an even greater pity that you're so resigned to your fate. You might be stubborn, but this is pathetic. How different the High Lord is from the brutal warband leader of centuries ago.
Lucian interrupted.
And what do you know about anything? You're just Amarantha's whore. Her whore I might be, but not without my reasons.
I flinched as his voice whetted itself into an edge.
At least I haven't bided my time among the hedges and flowers while the world has gone to hell.
Lucian's sword rose slightly.
If you think that's all I've been doing, you'll soon learn otherwise.
Little Lucian, you certainly gave them something to talk about when you switched to spring. Such a sad thing, to see your lovely mother in perpetual mourning over losing you. Lucian pointed his sword at Reason.
Watch your filthy mouth.
Reason laughed, a lover's laugh, low and soft and intimate.
Is that any way to speak to a High Lord of Prithian?
My heart stopped dead. That was why those fairies had run off on Fire Night. To cross him would have been suicide. And from the way darkness seemed to ripple from him, from those violet eyes that burned like stars.
Come now, Tamlin, Reason said. Shouldn't you reprimand your lackey for speaking to me like that?
I don't enforce rank in my court,
Tamlin said.
Still?
Reason crossed his arms.
But it's so entertaining when they grovel. I suppose your father never bothered to show you.
This isn't the Night Court, Lucian hissed. And you have no power here, so clear out. Amarantha's bed is growing cold.
I tried not to breathe too loudly. Reason, he'd been the one to send that head as a gift. I flinched. Was the Night Court where this woman, this Amarantha, was located too?
Reason snickered, but then he was upon Lucian, too fast for me to follow with my human eyes, growling in his face.
Lucian pressed me into the wall with his back, hard enough that I stifled a cry as I was squished against the wood.
I was slaughtering on the battlefield before you were even born, Reason snarled.
Then as quickly as he had come, he withdrew, casual and careless.
No, I would never dare to paint that dark, immortal grace. Not in 100 years.
Besides, he said, stuffing his hands into his pockets. Who do you think taught your beloved Tamlin the finer aspects of swords and females? You can't truly believe he learned everything in his father's little war camps.
Tamlin rubbed his temples. Save it for another time, Rhys. You'll see me soon enough.
Rhys and meandered toward the door. She's already preparing for you. Given your current state, I think I can safely report that you've already been broken and will reconsider her offer. Lucian's breath hitched as Reason passed the table. The High Lord of the Night Court ran a finger along the back of my chair, a casual gesture. I'm looking forward to seeing your face when you... Reason studied the table.
Lucian went stick straight, pressing me harder against the wall. The table was still set for three, my half-eaten plate of food sitting right before him.
Where is your guest? Reason asked, lifting my goblet and sniffing it before setting it down again.
I sent them off when I sensed your arrival, Tamlin lied coolly.
Reason now faced the High Lord, and his perfect face was void of emotion before his brows rose. A flicker of excitement, perhaps even disbelief, flashed across his features, but he whipped his head to Lucian. Magic seared my nostrils, and I stared at Reason in undiluted terror as his face contorted with rage.
You dare glamour me? He growled, his violet eyes burning as they bore into my own.
Lucian just pressed me harder into the wall. Tamlin's chair groaned as it was shoved back. He rose, claws at the ready, deadlier than any of the knives strapped to him.
Reason's face became a mask of calm fury as he stared and stared at me. I remember you, he purred. It seems like you ignored my warning to stay out of trouble. He turned to Tamlin. Who, pray tell, is your guest?
My betrothed, Lucian answered.
Oh? Here I was, thinking you still mourned your commoner lover after all these centuries, Reason said, stalking toward me. The sunlight didn't gleam on the metallic threads of his tunic, as if it balked from the darkness pulsing from him.
Lucian spat at Reason's feet and shoved his sword between us.
Reason's venom-coated smile grew. You draw blood from me, Lucian, and you'll learn how quickly Amarantha's whore can make the entire Autumn Court bleed, especially its darling lady.
The color leached from Lucian's face, but he held his ground. It was Tamlin who answered.
Put your sword down, Lucian.
Reason ran an eye over me. I knew you liked to stoop low with your lovers, Lucian, but I never thought you'd actually dabble with mortal trash. My face burned. Lucian was trembling. With rage or fear or sorrow, I couldn't tell. The Lady of the Autumn Court will be grieved indeed when she hears of her youngest son. If I were you, I'd keep your new pet well away from your father.
Leave, Rhys, Tamlin commanded, standing a few feet behind the High Lord of the Night Court.
And yet he didn't make a move to attack, despite the claws, despite Reason still approaching me. Perhaps a battle between two High Lords could tear this manor to its foundations and leave only dust in its wake. Or perhaps, if Reason was indeed this woman's lover, the retaliation from hurting him would be too great, especially with the added burden of facing the Blight.
Rhysand brushed Lucian aside as if he were a curtain.
There was nothing between us now, and the air was sharp and cold. But Tamlin remained where he was, and Lucian didn't so much as blink as Rhysand, with horrific gentleness, pried the knife from my hands and sent it scattering across the room.
That won't do you any good anyway, Rhysand said to me. If you were wise, you would be screaming and running from this place, from these people. It's a wonder that you're still here, actually.
My confusion must have been written across my face, for Rhysand laughed loudly.
Oh, she doesn't know, does she?
I trembled, unable to find words or courage.
You have seconds, Rhys, Tamlin warned. Seconds to get out. If I were you, I wouldn't speak to me like that.
Against my volition, my body straightened, every muscle going taut, my bones straining. Magic, but deeper than that. Power that seized everything inside me and took control. Even my blood flowed where he willed it. I couldn't move. An invisible, talon-tipped hand scraped against my mind, and I knew. One push, one swipe of those mental claws, and who I was would cease to exist.
Let her go, Tamlin said, bristling, but didn't advance forward.
A kind of panic had entered his eyes, and he glanced from me to Rhysand.
Enough!
I'd forgotten that human minds are as easy to shatter as eggshells, Rhysand said, and ran a finger across the base of my throat. I shuddered, my eyes burning.
Look at how delightful she is. Look how she's trying not to cry out in terror. It would be quick, I promise.
Had I retained any semblance of control over my body, I might have vomited.
She has the most delicious thoughts about you, Tamlin, he said.
She's wondered about the feeling of your fingers on her thighs, between them, too. He chuckled. Even as he said my most private thoughts, even as I burned with outrage and shame, I trembled at the grip still on my mind.
Rhysand turned to the High Lord.
I'm curious. Why did she wonder if it would feel good to have you bite her breast the way you bit her neck?
Let her go.
Tamlin's face was twisted with such feral rage that it struck a different, deeper chord of terror in me.
If it's any consolation, Rhysand confided to him, she would have been the one for you.
And you might have gotten away with it. A bit late, though. She's more stubborn than you are.
Those invisible claws lazily caressed my mind again, then vanished.
I sank to the floor, curling over my knees as I reeled in everything that I was, as I tried to keep from sobbing, from screaming, from emptying my stomach onto the floor.
Amarantha will enjoy breaking her, Rhysand observed to Tamlin. Almost as much as she'll enjoy watching you as she shatters her bit by bit.
Tamlin was frozen, his arms, his claws hanging limply at his side. I'd never seen him look like that.
Please, was all that Tamlin said.
Please, what?
Rhysand said, gently, coaxingly, like a lover.
Don't tell Amarantha about her, Tamlin said, his voice strained.
And why not?
As her whore, he said with a glance tossed in Lucian's direction, I should tell her everything.
Please, Tamlin managed, as if it were difficult to breathe.
Rhysand pointed at the ground and his smile became vicious.
Beg, and I'll consider not telling Amarantha.
Tamlin dropped to his knees and bowed his head.
Lower.
Tamlin pressed his forehead to the floor, his hand sliding along the floor towards Reason's boots. I could have wept with rage at the sight of Tamlin being forced to bow to someone, at the sight of my High Lord being put so low. Reason pointed at Lucian.
You too, fox boy.
Lucian's face was dark, but he lowered himself to his knees, then touched his head to the ground. I wished for the knife Reason had chucked away, for anything with which to kill him. I stopped shaking long enough to hear Reese speak again.
Are you doing this for your sake, or for hers?
He pondered, then shrugged, as if he weren't forcing a High Lord of Prithian to grovel.
You're far too desperate, Tamlin. It's off-putting. Becoming High Lord made you so boring.
Are you going to tell Amarantha?
Tamlin said, keeping his face on the floor. Reason smirked.
Perhaps I'll tell her. Perhaps I won't.
In a flash of motion too fast for me to detect, Tamlin was on his feet, fangs dangerously close to Reason's face.
None of that,
Reason said, clicking his tongue and lightly shoving Tamlin away with a single hand.
Not with a lady present.
His eyes shifted to my face. What's your name, love? Giving him my name and my family name would only lead to more pain and suffering. He might very well find my family and drag them into Prithian to torment, just to amuse himself. But he could steal my name from my mind if I hesitated for too long. Keeping my mind blank and calm, I blurted the first name that came to mind. A village friend of my sister's whom I'd never spoken to and whose face I couldn't recall.
Claire Better.
My voice was nothing more than a gasp. Reason turned back to Tamlin, unfazed by the High Lord's proximity.
Well, this was entertaining. The most fun I've had in ages, actually. I'm looking forward to seeing you three under the mountain. I'll give Amarantha your regards.
Then Reason vanished into nothing, as if he'd stepped through a rip in the world, leaving us alone in horrible, trembling silence. Chapter 27. I lay in bed, watching the pools of moonlight shift on the floor. It was an effort not to dwell on Tamlin's face as he ordered me and Lucian to leave and shut the door to the dining room. Had I not been so bent on piecing myself together, I might have stayed. Might have even asked Lucian about it, about everything. But like the coward I was, I bolted to my room, where Alice was waiting with a cup of molten chocolate. It was even more of an effort not to recall the roaring that rattled the chandelier or the cracking of shattered furniture that echoed through the house. I didn't go to dinner. I didn't want to know if there was a dining room to eat in, and I couldn't bring myself to paint. The house had been quiet for some time now, but the ripples of Tamlin's rage echoed through it, reverberating in the wood and stone and glass. I didn't want to think about all that Reason had said. Didn't want to think about the looming storm of the Blight, or Under the Mountain, whatever it was called, and why I might be forced to go there. And Amarantha, at last a name to go with the female presence that stalked their lives. I shuddered each time I considered how deadly she must be to command the High Lords of Prithian. To hold Reason's leash and to make Tamlin beg to keep me hidden from her. The door creaked and I jerked upright. Moonlight glimmered on gold, but my heart didn't ease as Tamlin shut the door and approached my bed. His steps were slow and heavy, and he didn't speak until he'd taken a seat on the edge of the mattress.
I'm sorry, he said.
His voice was hoarse and empty. It's fine, I lied, clenching the sheets in my hands. If I thought too long about it, I could still feel the claw-tipped caress of Reason's power scraping against my mind.
"It's not fine," he growled,
and grabbed one of my hands, wrenching my fingers from the sheets.
"It's..."
He hung his head, sighing deeply as his hand tightened on mine.
"Feyre, I wish..."
He shook his head and cleared his throat.
"I'm sending you home, Feyre."
Something inside me splintered.
"What?"
"I'm sending you home," he repeated.
And though his words were stronger, louder, they trembled a bit.
"What about the terms of the treaty?"
"I have taken on your life debt. Should someone come inquiring after the broken laws, I'll take responsibility for Andras's death."
"But you once said that there was no other loophole. The Suriel said there was no..."
A snarl. "If they have a problem with it, they can tell me."
And wind up in ribbons.
My chest caved in, leaving. Free. Did I do something wrong?
He lifted my hand to press it to his lower cheek. He was so invitingly warm.
"You did nothing wrong."
He turned his face to kiss my palm.
"You were perfect,"
he murmured onto my skin, then lowered my hand.
"Then why do I have to go?"
I yanked my hand away.
"Because there are people who would hurt you, Feyre. Hurt you because of what you are to me. I thought I would be able to handle them, to shield you from it, but after today, I can't. So you need to go home, far from here. You'll be safe there."
"I can hold my own, and..."
"You can't," he said,
and his voice wobbled.
"Because I can't."
He seized my face in both hands.
"I can't even protect myself against them, against what's happening in Prithian."
I felt every word as it passed from his mouth and onto my lips, a rush of hot, frantic air.
"Even if we stood against the Blight, they would hunt you down, she would find a way to kill you."
"Amarantha."
He bristled at the name, but nodded.
"Who is..."
"When you get home," he cut in, "don't tell anyone the truth about where you were. Let them believe the glamour. Don't tell them who I am. Don't tell them where you stayed. Her spies will be looking for you."
"I don't understand."
I grabbed his forearm and squeezed it tight.
"Tell me..."
"You have to go home, Feyre."
Home. It wasn't my home. It was hell.
"I want to stay with you,"
I whispered, my voice breaking.
"Treaty or no treaty, Blight or no Blight."
He ran a hand over his face. His fingers contracted when they met with his mask.
"I know."
"So let me..."
"There's no debate," he snarled, and I glared at him. "Don't you understand?"
He shot to his feet.
"Rhys was the start of it. Do you want to be here when the Adder returns? Do you want to know what kind of creatures the Adder answers to? Things like the bog, and worse."
"Let me help you."
"No."
He paced before the bed.
"Didn't you read between the lines today?"
I hadn't, but I lifted my chin and crossed my arms.
"So you're sending me away because I'm useless in a fight?"
"I'm sending you away because it makes me sick thinking about you in their hands."
Silence fell, filled only by the sounds of his heavy breathing. He sank onto the bed and pressed the heels of his palms into his eyes. His words echoed through me, melting my anger, turning everything inside me watery and frail.
How long do I have to go away for?"
He didn't reply.
"A week?"
No answer.
"A month?"
He shook his head slowly. My upper lip curled, but I forced myself into neutrality. A year? That much time away from him.
I don't know.
But not forever, right? Even if the blight spread to the spring court again, even if it could shred me apart, I would come back. He brushed the hair from my face. I shook him off. I suppose it'll be easier if I'm gone, I said, looking away from him. Who wants someone around who's so covered in thorns?
Thorns?
Thorny, prickly, sour, contrary. He leaned forward and kissed me lightly.
Not forever, he said onto my mouth.
And though I knew it was a lie, I put my arms around his neck and kissed him. He pulled me onto his lap, holding me tightly against him as his lips parted mine. I became aware of every pore in my body when his tongue entered my mouth. Though the horror of Reason's magic still tore at me, I pushed Tamlin onto the bed, straddling him, pinning him as if it would somehow keep me from leaving, as if it would make time stop entirely. His hands rested on my hips, and their heat singed me through the thin silk of my nightgown. My hair fell around our faces like a curtain. I couldn't kiss him fast enough, hard enough to express the rushing need within me. He growled softly and deftly flipped us over, spreading me beneath him as he wrenched his lips from my mouth and made a trail of kisses down my neck. My entire world constricted to the touch of his lips on my skin. Everything beyond them, beyond him, was a void of darkness and moonlight. My back arched as he reached the spot he'd once bitten, and I dragged my hands through his hair, savoring the silken smoothness. He traced the arc of my hip bones, lingering at the edge of my undergarments. My nightgown had become hitched around my waist, but I didn't care. I hooked my bare legs around his, running my feet down the hard muscles of his calves. He breathed my name onto my chest, one of his hands exploring the plane of my torso, rising up to the slope of my breast. I trembled, anticipating the feel of his hand there, and his mouth found mine again as his fingers stopped just below. His kissing was slower this time, gentler. The fingertips of his other hand slipped beneath the waist of my undergarment, and I sucked in a breath. He hesitated at the sound, pulling back slightly. But I bit his lip in a silent command that had him growling into my mouth. With one long claw, he shredded through silk and lace, and my undergarment fell away in pieces. The claw retracted, and his kiss deepened as his fingers slid between my legs, coaxing and teasing. I ground against his hand, yielding completely to the writhing wildness that had roared alive inside me, and breathed his name onto his skin. He paused again, his fingers retracting, but I grabbed him, pulling him farther on top of me. I wanted him now, wanted the barriers of our clothing to vanish. I wanted to taste his sweat, wanted to become full of him. Don't stop, I gasped out. He said thickly, resting his brow between my breasts as he shuddered.
If we keep going, I won't be able to stop at all.
I sat up and he watched me, hardly breathing. But I kept my eyes on his, my own breathing becoming steady as I raised my nightgown over my head and tossed it to the floor. Utterly naked before him, I watched his gaze travel to my bare breasts, peaked against the chill night, to my abdomen, to between my thighs. A ravenous, unyielding sort of hunger passed over his face. I bent a leg and slid it to the side, a silent invitation. He let out a low growl and slowly, with predatory intent, raised his gaze to mine again. The full force of that wild, unrelenting High Lord's power focused solely on me. And I felt the storm contained beneath his skin, so capable of sweeping away everything I was, even in its lessened state. But I could trust him, trust myself to weather that mighty power. I could throw all that I was at him and he wouldn't balk. "Give me everything," I breathed.
He lunged, a beast freed of its tether. We were a tangle of limbs and teeth, and I tore at his clothes until they were on the floor, then tore at his skin until I marked him down his back, his arms. His claws were out, but devastatingly gentle on my hips as he slid down between my thighs and feasted on me, stopping only after I shuddered and fractured. I was moaning his name when he sheathed himself inside me in a powerful, slow thrust that had me splintering around him.
We moved together, unending and wild and burning, and when I went over the edge the next time, he roared and went with me. I fell asleep in his arms, and when I awoke a few hours later, we made love again, lazily and intently, a slow burning smolder to the wildfire of earlier. Once we were both spent, panting and sweat-slicked, we lay in silence for a time, and I breathed in the smell of him, earthy and crisp. I would never be able to capture that, never be able to paint the feel and taste of him, no matter how many times I tried, no matter how many colors I used. Tamlin traced idle circles on the plane of my stomach and murmured,
"We should sleep. You have a long journey tomorrow."
"Tomorrow?" I sat upright, not at all minding my nakedness, not after he'd seen everything, tasted everything. His mouth was a hard line.
"At dawn."
"But it's..." He sat up in a smooth motion.
"Please, Vera. Please."
Tamlin had bowed before Reesend, for my sake. He shifted toward the edge of the bed. "Where are you going?" He looked over his shoulder at me.
"If I stay, you won't get any sleep."
"Stay," I said. "I promise to keep my hands to myself."
"Lie, such an outright lie."
He gave me a half smile that told me he knew it too, but nestled down, tugging me into his arms. I wrapped an arm around his waist and rested my head in the hollow of his shoulder. He idly stroked my hair. I didn't want to sleep, didn't want to lose a minute with him, but an immense exhaustion was pulling me away from consciousness until all I knew was the touch of his fingers in my hair and the sounds of his breathing. I was leaving. Just when this place had become more than a sanctuary, when the command of the Soriel had become a blessing and Tamlin far, far more than a savior or friend, I was leaving. It could be years until I saw this house again, years until I smelled his rose garden, until I saw those gold-flecked eyes. Home. This was home. As consciousness left me at last, I thought I heard him speak, his mouth close to my ear.
"I love you,"
he whispered, and kissed my brow.
"Thorns and all."
He was gone when I awoke, and I was certain I had dreamed it. Chapter 28. There wasn't much to my packing and farewells. I was somewhat surprised when Alice clothed me in an outfit very unlike my usual garb, frilly and confining and binding in all the wrong places. Some mortal fashion among the wealthy, no doubt. The dress was made up of layers of pale pink silk, accented with white and blue lace. Alice placed a short, lightweight jacket of white linen on me, and atop my head she angled an absurd little ivory hat, clearly for decoration. I half expected a parasol to go with it. I said as much to Alice, who clicked her tongue.
Shouldn't you be giving me a weepy farewell?
I tugged at the lace gloves, useless and flimsy. I don't like goodbyes. If I could, I'd just walk out and not say anything. Alice gave me a long look.
I don't like them either.
I went to the door, but despite myself, I said, I hope you get to be with your nephews again soon.
Make the most of your freedom, was all she said. Downstairs, Lucian snorted at the sight of me.
Those clothes are enough to convince me I never want to enter the human realm.
I'm not sure the human realm would know what to do with you, I said.
Lucian's smile was edged, his shoulders tight as he gave a sharp look behind me to where Tam was waiting in front of a gilded carriage. When he turned back, that metal eye narrowed.
I thought you were smarter than this.
Goodbye to you too, I said.
Friend indeed.
It wasn't my choice or even my fault that they'd kept the bulk of their conflict from me. Even if I could do nothing against the Blight, or against the creatures, or against Amarantha, whoever she was.
Lucian shook his head, his scar stark in the bright sun, and stalked toward Tamlin, despite the High Lord's warning growl.
You're not even going to give her a few more days? Just a few? Before you send her back to that human cesspit? Lucian demanded. This isn't up for debate, Tamlin snapped, pointing at the house. I'll see you at lunch.
Lucian stared him down for a moment, spat on the ground, and stormed up the stairs. Tamlin didn't reprimand him. I might have thought more on Lucian's words, might have shouted a retort after him, but my chest hollowed out as I faced Tamlin in front of the gilded carriage, my hands sweaty within the gloves.
Remember what I told you, he said.
I nodded, too busy memorizing the lines of his face to reply. Had he meant what I thought he'd said last night? That he loved me? I shifted, already aching in the little white pumps into which Alice had stuffed my poor feet.
The mortal realm remains safe, for you, for your family.
I nodded, wondering whether he might have tried to persuade me to leave our territory, to sail south, but understood that I would have refused to be so far from the wall, from him. That going back to my family was as far as I would allow to be sent from his side. My paintings. They're yours, I said, unable to come up with anything better to express how I felt, what it did to me to be sent away, and how terrified I was of the carriage looming behind me. He lifted my chin with a finger.
I will see you again.
He kissed me and pulled away too quickly. I swallowed hard, fighting the burning in my eyes.
I love you, Feyre, I longed for him to say.
I turned before my vision blurred, but he was immediately there to help me into the opulent carriage. He watched me take my seat through the open door, his face a mask of calm.
Ready?
No, I wasn't ready. Not after last night, not after all these months. But I nodded. If Rescind came back, if this Amarantha person was indeed such a threat that I would only become another body for Tamlin to defend, I needed to go. He shut the door, sealing me inside with a click that sounded through me. He leaned through the open window to caress my cheek, and I could have sworn that I felt my heart crack. The footman snapped the whip. Tamlin's fingers brushed my mouth. The carriage jolted as the six white horses started into a walk. I bit my lip to keep it from wobbling. Tamlin smiled at me one last time.
I love you, he said, and stepped away.
I should say it. I should say those words, but they got stuck in my throat because of what he had to face.
because he might not find me again despite his promise, because beneath it all, he was an immortal, and I would grow old and die. And maybe he meant it now, and perhaps last night had been as altering for him as it had been for me, but I would not become a burden to him. I would not become another weight pressing upon his shoulders. So I said nothing as the carriage moved, and I did not look back as we passed through the manor gates and into the forest beyond. Almost as soon as the carriage entered the woods, the sparkle of magic stuffed itself up my nose, and I was dragged into a deep sleep. I was furious when I jerked awake, wondering why it had been at all necessary, but the air was full of the thunderous clopping of hooves against a flagstone path. Rubbing my eyes, I peered out the window to see a sloping drive lined with conical hedges and irises. I had never been here before. I took in as many details as I could as the carriage came to a stop before a chateau of white marble and emerald roofs, nearly as large as Tamlin's manor. The faces of the approaching servants were unfamiliar, and I kept my face blank as I gripped the footman's hand and stepped out of the carriage. Human. He was utterly human, with his rounded ears, his ruddy face, his clothes. The other servants were human, too, all of them restless, not at all like the utter stillness with which the High Fae held themselves. Unfinished, graceless creatures of earth and blood. The servants were eyeing me, but keeping back, shrinking away. Did I look so grand, then? I straightened at the flurry of motion and color that burst from the front doors. I recognized my sisters before they saw me. They approached, smoothing their fine dresses, their brows rising at the gilded carriage. That cracking, caved-in feeling in my chest worsened. Tamlin had said he'd taken care of my family, but this? Nesta spoke first, curtsying low. Elaine followed suit. "Welcome to our home," Nesta said a bit flatly, her eyes on the ground. "Lady..." I let out a stark laugh. "Nesta," I said, and she went rigid. I laughed again. "Nesta, don't you recognize your own sister?" Elaine gasped. "Feyre?" She reached for me, but paused. "What of Aunt Ripley, then? Is she dead?" That was the story, I remembered, that I'd gone to care for a long-lost wealthy aunt. I nodded slowly. Nesta took in my clothes and carriage, the pearls that were woven into her gold-brown hair gleaming in the sunlight. "She left you her fortune," Nesta stated flatly. It wasn't a question.
"Feyre, you should have told us,"
Elaine said, still gaping.
"Oh, how awful. And you had to endure losing her all on your own, you poor thing. Father will be devastated that he didn't get to pay his respects."
Such simple things. Relatives dying and fortunes being left and paying respects to the dead. And yet, a weight I hadn't realized I'd still been carrying eased. These were the only things that worried them now. "Why are you being so quiet?" Nesta said, keeping her distance. I'd forgotten how cunning her eyes were, how cold. She'd been made differently from something harder and stronger than bone and blood. She was as different from the humans around us as I had become.
"I'm glad to see how well your own fortunes have improved," I managed. "What happened?"
The driver, glamored to look human, no mask in sight, began unloading trunks for the footmen. I hadn't known Tamlin had sent me off with belongings. Elaine beamed. Didn't you get our letters?
She didn't remember, or maybe she'd never actually known then that I wouldn't have been able to read them anyway.
When I shook my head, she complained about the uselessness of the post and then said,
Oh, you'll never believe it. Almost a week after you went to care for Aunt Ripley, some stranger appeared at our door and asked Father to invest his money for him. Father was hesitant because the offer was so good, but the stranger insisted, so Father did it. He gave us a trunk of gold just for agreeing. Within a month, he doubled the man's investment, and then the money started pouring in. And you know what? All those ships we lost were found in Barat, complete with Father's profits.
Tamlin. Tamlin had done that for them. I ignored the growing hollowness in my chest.
Feyre, you look as dumbfounded as we were,
Elaine said, hooking elbows with me.
Come inside, we'll show you the house. We don't have a room decorated for you because we thought you'd be with poor old Aunt Ripley for months yet, but we have so many bedrooms that you can sleep in a different one each night if you wish.
I glanced over my shoulder at Nesta, who watched me with a carefully blank face. So she hadn't married Thomas Mandray after all.
Father will likely faint when he sees you,
Elaine babbled on, patting my hand as she escorted me toward the main door.
Oh, maybe he'll throw a ball in your honor, too.
Nesta fell into step behind us, a quiet, stalking presence. I didn't want to know what she was thinking. I wasn't certain whether I should be furious or relieved that they'd gotten on so well without me, and whether Nesta was wondering the same. Horseshoes clopped, and the carriage began ambling down the driveway, away from me, back to my true home, back to Tamlin. It took all my will to keep from running after it. He had said he loved me, and I'd felt the truth of it with our lovemaking, and he'd sent me away to keep me safe. He'd freed me from the treaty to keep me safe. Because whatever storm was about to break in Prithian was brutal enough that even a high lord couldn't stand against it. I had to stay. It was wise to stay here. But I couldn't fight the sensation, like a darkening shadow within me, that I'd made a very, very big mistake in leaving, no matter Tamlin's orders. Stay with the High Lord, the Soriel had said. It's only command. I shoved the thought from my mind as my father wept at the sight of me and did indeed order a ball in my honor. And though I knew that the promise I had once made to my mother was fulfilled, though I knew that I was truly free of it and that my family was forever cared for, that growing, lengthening shadow blanketed my heart. Chapter 29. Inventing stories about my time with Aunt Ripley required minimal effort. I read to her daily. She instructed me on deportment from her bedside, and I nursed her until she died in her sleep 2 weeks ago, leaving her fortune to me. And what a tremendous fortune it was. The trunks that accompanied me hadn't contained just clothing. Several of them had been filled with gold and jewels. Not cut jewels either, but enormous raw jewels that would pay for 1,000 estates. My father was currently taking inventory of those jewels. He'd hold himself up in his office that overlooked the garden in which I was sitting beside Elaine in the grass. Through the window, I spied my father hunched over his desk, a little scale before him as he weighed an uncut ruby the size of a duck's egg. He was clear-eyed again and moved with a sense of purpose, of vibrancy that I hadn't seen since before the downfall. Even his limp was improved, made miraculously better by some tonic and a salve a strange passing healer had given him for free. I would have been forever grateful to Tamlin for that kindness alone. Gone were his hunched shoulders and downcast, misty eyes. My father smiled freely,
laughed readily, and doted on Elaine, who in turn doted on him.
Nesta, though, had been quiet and watchful, only giving Elaine answers not longer than a word or two.
"These bulbs," Elaine said, pointing with a gloved hand to a cluster of purple and white flowers, "came all the way from the tulip fields of the continent. Father promised that next spring he'll take me to see them. He claims that for mile after mile there's nothing but these flowers." She patted the rich, dark soil. The little garden beneath the window was hers. Every bloom and shrub had been picked and planted by her hand. She would allow no one else to care for it. Even the weeding and watering she did on her own. Though the servants did help her carry over the heavy watering cans, she admitted. She would have marveled, likely wept, at the gardens I'd become so accustomed to, at the flowers in perpetual bloom at the spring court.
"You should come with me," Elaine went on. "Nesta won't go because she says she doesn't want to risk the sea crossing, but you and I? Oh, we'd have fun, wouldn't we?"
I glanced sidelong at her. My sister was beaming, content. Prettier than I'd ever seen her, even in her simple muslin gardening dress. Her cheeks were flushed beneath her large floppy hat.
I think I'd like to see the continent," I said.
And it was true, I realized. There was so much of the world that I hadn't seen, hadn't ever thought about visiting, hadn't ever been able to dream of visiting.
"I'm surprised you're so eager to go next spring," I said. "Isn't that right in the middle of the season?"
The socialite season, which had ended a few weeks ago, apparently full of parties and balls and luncheons and gossip, gossip, gossip. Elaine had told me all about it at dinner the night before, hardly noticing that it was an effort for me to get down my food. So much of it was the same. The meat, the bread, the vegetables, and yet, it was ash in my mouth compared to what I'd consumed in Prithian.
"And I'm surprised you don't have a line of suitors out the door, begging for your hand."
Elaine flushed, but plunged her little shovel into the ground to dig out a weed.
"Yes, well, there will always be other seasons. Nesta won't tell you, but this season was somewhat strange."
"In what way?"
She shrugged her slim shoulders. "People acted as if we'd all just been ill for 8 years or had gone away to some distant country. Not that we'd been a few villages over in that cottage. You'd think we'd dreamed it all up, what happened to us over those years. No one said a word about it."
"Did you think they would?"
If I were as rich as this house suggested, there were surely plenty of families willing to overlook the stain of our poverty.
"No, but it made me wish for those years again, even with the hunger and cold. This house feels so big sometimes, and Father is always busy, and Nesta."
She looked over her shoulder to where my eldest sister stood by a gnarled mulberry tree, looking out over the flat expanse of our lands. She'd barely spoken to me the night before, and not at all during breakfast. I'd been surprised when she joined us outside, even if she'd stayed by the tree this whole time.
"Nesta didn't finish the season. She wouldn't tell me why. She began refusing every invitation. She hardly talks to anyone, and I feel wretched when my friends pay a visit, because she makes them so uncomfortable when she stares at them in that way of hers."
Elaine sighed.
"Maybe you could talk to her."
I contemplated telling Elaine that Nesta and I hadn't had a civil conversation in years, but then Elaine added,
"She went to see you, you know."
I blinked, my blood going a bit cold.
"What?"
"Well, she was gone for only about a week, and she said that her carriage broke down not halfway there and it was easier to come back. But you wouldn't know since you never got any of our letters."
I looked over at Nesta, standing so still under the branches,
the summer breeze rustling the skirts of her dress. Had she gone to see me, only to be turned back by whatever glamour magic Tamlin had cast on her? I turned back